The church is in Africa at the service of reconciliation, peace and justice.
The church is in Africa at the service of reconciliation, peace and justice.
This is the Africa service of Vatican Radio.
Welcome to our half-hour daily program for Africa.
Stay tuned for our bulletin of church news, which will be followed by Panorama, and then our feature, Justice and Peace. We shall close with this sports roundup. I am John Baptist Tomusime. Pope Francis has sent a message to the executive chairman of the World Economic Forum, Professor Klaus Schwab, on the occasion of the organization's 50th anniversary. The World Economic Forum was founded by Professor Klaus Schwab in 1971 in Geneva, Switzerland, with the mission of improving the state of the world by engaging business, political, academic, and other leaders of society to shape global, regional, and industry agendas. It hosts an annual meeting in the Swiss city of Davos every year at the end of January. This year's meeting opened on Tuesday, January 21st, and is scheduled to close on Friday, January 24th. It is guided by the theme, Stakeholders for a Cohesive and Sustainable World. The meeting has brought together over 3,000 business leaders, international political leaders, economists, celebrities, religious leaders, and journalists. The Holy See is represented by the prefect of the Dicastery for Promoting Integral Human Development, Cardinal Peter Turkson. In his message, Pope Francis acknowledges that in the last 50 years, the forum has offered an opportunity for the engagement of different stakeholders to explore innovative and effective ways of building a better world. It has also provided an arena where political will and mutual cooperation can be guided and strengthened in overcoming threats such as isolationism, individualism, and ideological colonization, and it calls for greater engagement at all levels in order to address more effectively the various issues facing humanity. The Pope pointed out that in the last 50 years, the world has undergone political, economic, labor, technological, and environmental changes. While many of these have benefited humanity, others have not. The Pope called upon the participants at the forum to remember that all human beings are members of the human family, and from this fact flows the moral obligation to care for one another, and the principle of putting human beings at the center of public policy rather than the mere pursuit of power or profit. The Holy Father explained that this duty is binding to business sectors and governments alike and is indispensable in the search for equitable solutions to the challenges we face. He called upon the participants to go beyond short-term technological or economic approaches and give full consideration to the ethical dimension in seeking resolutions to present problems and to initiatives for the future. He prayed that the ongoing forum and future forums give attention in their discussions to the integral development of our brothers and sisters, including those of future generations, and lead to a growth in solidarity, especially with the needy who experience social and economic injustice and whose very existence is threatened. Meanwhile, reports from Davos, where the World Economic Forum has opened, say thousands of people demonstrated on Monday and Tuesday to highlight the harm capitalism is doing to societies. As you heard on this program, the Week of Prayer for Christian Unity started last Saturday, January 18th, and will close this coming Saturday, January 25th. Its theme is taken from the Book of the Acts of the Apostles, chapter 28, verse 2, and it reads, "They showed us unusual kindness." The theme is based on the biblical passage describing the shipwreck of St. Paul in Malta, and promotes reflection on St. Paul's journey of faith and also on the ecumenical virtue of hospitality. Caritas Internationalis calls upon Christians to accompany migrants and refugees with material, spiritual, and psychological help in the same way the people of Malta did to St. Paul and his companions. The Bishop of the Catholic Diocese of Yei in South Sudan, the Right Reverend Ekolano Lodu Tombe, has called upon the African Union and the international community at large to help President Salva Kiir and his rival Riek Machar to form the government of national unity without resorting to war. The bishop was speaking on Sunday during Holy Mass at Christ the King Cathedral in Yei. He invited the faithful to pray for peace in South Sudan. He also appealed to the government and to the rebels to maintain the ceasefire. The government of South Sudan and the rebels loyal to Riek Machar have missed several deadlines on the formation of a government of national unity. Last December, they again postponed its formation for 100 days in order to sort out some contentious issues. The new deadline is now the month of February. The civil crisis in South Sudan started in December 2013 as a power struggle between President Salva Kiir and his former vice Riek Machar. The conflict has killed tens of thousands of people and displaced more than 4 million others, with some crossing into neighboring countries, for example Sudan, Ethiopia, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Uganda, and Kenya. Reports from Nigeria say one of the four seminarians who were kidnapped from Kaduna more than 10 days ago has been released. The kidnappers dumped him at the side of a highway where he was picked by Good Samaritans who took him to hospital. The young man is suffering from major injuries inflicted on him by his captors. Police in Kaduna said last week that the kidnappers had contacted the families of the seminarians, demanding ransom for their release. Intelligence sources in the area say the released seminarian was so weak that the abductors feared he could die in their hands. His release, according to intelligence sources, should be interpreted as a gesture of goodwill to comfort the parents that the three seminarians still in captivity could be released if the demands are met. Kidnappings of people believed to be rich or to belong to families and communities that are rich are increasingly becoming common in Nigeria. And lastly, the World Health Organization, the WHO, has released the results of a study it carried out in partnership with the other agencies on quitting smoking. The study shows that smokers who give up tobacco prior to a minor or a non-emergency operation or surgery are less likely to experience complications after. You are tuned to the English Africa Service of Vatican Radio.
African News Panorama.
The immigration minister of Norway has told refugees to avoid the Libyan route if they want to reach Europe. Speaking at the refugee center in Rwanda, Joran Kalmir said that it was important to give refugees a signal not to go to Libya if you want your asylum assessed. He said they have to do it in Rwanda instead or they will not come to Europe that way. Kalmir visited the Gashora Refugee Center in Rwanda on Monday to reaffirm his country's pledge to take in 600 refugees. He said Norway will carefully examine each case and will not take economic migrants but real refugees. Rwanda agreed to take 500 refugees from Libya and grant permanent residence to those who seek it. There are currently 3,000 migrants stranded in Libya. Apart from Norway, Canada agreed to take 800, France 200 and Sweden 150. More than 20 million phones in Tanzania are still operating despite threats by the government to shut them down. Monday was the last day for people to register their SIM cards under a new biometric system. The National Telecoms Regulator has said that some SIM cards have been switched off, but according to media reports, the bulk of them appear to still be active and allowing users to communicate freely. There has been no word from the authorities about whether the wider shutdown would still take place. When the new biometric registration system was announced, the government said it would help fight cybercrime and fraud, but critics worried the information could be used to monitor people and jeopardize private communication. The former Attorney General of Nigeria has been charged over suspected bribes. Multinational oil giants Shell and Eni's local subsidiaries were also charged with illegally assisting ADOC. Nigeria's corruption watchdog, the Economic and Financial Crimes Commission, has filed multiple corruption charges this week after suspecting ADOC of taking bribes in order to facilitate a $1.3 billion United States dollars oil block sale. The sale of an offshore oil field by Malabu Oil and Gas in 2011 triggered an international investigation which included Shell and Eni, along with a number of former Nigerian politicians. ADOC served as Attorney General from 2010 to 2015. Interpol arrested him in Dubai in November 2019. He was then detained by the Economic and Financial Crimes Commission. A senior United States State Department official has warned against potential destabilization in the Central African Republic ahead of presidential elections that are scheduled for December. On his first visit to the country, the United States Assistant Secretary for African Affairs, Tai Banagi, said he wanted to know more about the Russian presence there in their formal and informal capacities. He had earlier told reporters that the United States believed more than 700 Russian soldiers were deployed in the Central African Republic that announced recently that the next presidential election will be held on Sunday, December 27, 2020. You are tuned to the Daily Africa Service of Vatican Radio.
And now, our feature, Justice and Peace. In this edition, we focus on people of African descent in India. There are hundreds of thousands of people of African origin who have been living in total obscurity in India for centuries. They are known as the Siddhis. They are found in small pockets of villages in the Indian states of Karnataka, Maharashtra, Gujarat, and Telangana. They are descendants of Bantu people of East Africa. Their ancestors were brought to India as slaves first by Arabs as early as the 7th century and later by the Portuguese slave traders around the 16th century. Others were free people who came to India as merchants, sailors, laborers, and as mercenaries. When slavery was abolished in the 18th and 19th centuries, the Siddhis fled into India's thick forests to escape being recaptured and tortured. The Indian society operates on the caste system, which divides people into rigid hierarchical groups, with the most privileged at the top of the hierarchy and the least privileged at the bottom. The Siddhis are ranked at the bottom of the social structure in the country. Bosco Kawesi is a Ugandan national who has been working to uplift the Siddhis by providing them with the appropriate education to enable them to live a meaningful life. He explains more on the caste system.
India is divided into four castes. The Sudra, those untouchables, which you love is tribals. There is the Kshatriya, there is the Vaishya. And then you find a Brahmin, they call them the tri-born. Those are the elites in the society. They control the resources, they control the system. Though they are few in number, all good things go to them. They take the cream, the cake first goes to their table before it could be divided to others. These are elites in India, the top class of the Indian society. Those are the Brahmin. Back in those days, they could use everyone just like the way the British used to behave with the slaves and all that. Even when you're working on their fields, who does all the work for them in the field? It is Sudras, the lower class people. The cities belong to the Sudra system because they would treat them the same way like the way they treat the Sudras. So in other words, in the social strata of the Indian culture, though they may be called the scheduled tribes, in reality, there is no specific position which is given to them. If that was the case, today the cities have MPs in the parliament. Because the rest of the tribals, they have MPs in parliament. 400 years the existence in this country, no one has gone even to be MP. Because the system is like that. If their position is really recognized, the government could have made efforts to see that at least one member can represent the cities in parliament or the state assembly.
Although their physical features are African, the Sidis have completely assimilated Indian culture. They are Indian citizens, but are victims of government indifference, marginalization, discrimination, ridicule, and exploitation. More than 80% of them have no educational background, and as a result, they are unemployable. Because of this, they largely depend on subsistence farming and the sale of manual labor for their survival. Bosco Kawesi believes that not providing appropriate education to the Sidis has contributed much to their mental enslavement.
When I first came, as per my understanding and definition of education, it was zero among the community. The education which they were receiving could not actually help them to discover the resources. That's a human resource. It could not make them to be competitive. It could not give them enough skills which can help them to compete in terms of getting jobs and all. In fact, it was offered in Canada medium language only. You could find only one person who could say, my name is so and so, and from there they can't continue. You see, education should liberate you from the social problems. So the type of education they were receiving, it could not help them to sustain their lives. In fact, it was helping them to be exploited more by the Brahmin. When we first came, we tried to introduce English. So everyone started convincing them that learning English would spoil their brains. If they learn English, they will not get jobs. They should study only in local language. You find a teacher who's running a school of kids from first standard until sixth standard, they're sitting in one classroom under one teacher. One line is first standard, second line is third standard. So he will tell first standard, you keep quiet, and then he teaches second standard, you also keep quiet. In the same classroom, you can imagine the type of education which was existing. I couldn't find even someone who has completed 10th standard when I came. I was really shocked. I couldn't believe when I could see the rest of the Indian community, majority speaking English, others their kids in very good schools. I couldn't believe it. But compared to the time when I came and now, there's been a lot of improvement. I could say it is a negligence from the government side. It is a system. You see, I may discriminate you in many ways. Discrimination doesn't mean that when I come and then take a stone and hit on your head. Even ignoring you is another form of discrimination because I know what is right and then I fail to do it. You know, it's some kind of abuse, exploitation. Because majority, they're working in farms of other Brahmin rich people. So the only way out they could exploit them or to make them to be bonded laborers is to keep them in that such of situation so that they don't have access to better jobs which can support their families. And say, no, now I'll not work as a bonded laborer, I have a good job. So it was a failure from the part of the government, I would say. They would have introduced a better system of education just like the rest of the Indian community. There's no reason why the government cannot put up an English medium school for everyone. They can't give me even one answer for that.
The Sidis among the poorest in the Indian society. Bosco Kawesi again.
The Sidis, they look like Africans. Originally, they're from Africa. When we talk about being the lowest or below poverty line, it does not depend on the color of the skin, but we are talking about the economic status of an individual. So in terms of economic status, the Sudra is accounted as untouchable. But if you put a Sudra with a city, they too may move together because they share the common platform, which group platform poverty may combine both of them. Because if a Sudra overlooks at the city, it will be in such a way that the Sudra has come up above the poverty line, because we have three levels. We have people who are below the line, and those who are on the line, and above the line. So, if there are changes in economic lifestyle, other people tend to overlook others.
Bosco Kawesi has been working to uplift the cities since the 1990s. He explains what are his future plans for these people.
What I'm doing for the community is try to orient them. You see, I don't believe in a theory where you give fish to someone. My presence was to train the cities how to fish and where to fish, to take the right nets, to take the right hooks. And after fishing, what do you do with the fish? Do you give it to the dog or you eat it? Presently, we have so many cities who are educated. Others, you see, they're working in court as lawyers. Others in government officers, and they're trying to become judges. At present, I'm engaged in orientation method. But my plans are more still focusing on social education.
Bosco Kawesi, a Ugandan national in India, who is working to uplift the living conditions of the marginalized people of African descent there, known as the cities. And that was Justice and Peace for this week.
This is a Sports Roundup, and welcome to the program. My name is Kanyanta Godfrey Kampamba. Two athletics giants are going to face each other in April in London. The news is written all over the walls about the upcoming battle between world marathon record holder Eliud Kipchoge and Kenenisa Bekele at the London Marathon in April. The race organizers announced last week on Thursday that Bekele had confirmed his participation in the race, joining an already crowded elite field. That has Kipchoge and the Ethiopian duo of Mosnit Jeremio and Mule Washun. Kipchoge and Bekele, the two greatest distance runners in history and the two fastest men ever over the marathon distance, will go head-to-head on the streets of London on April 26th in a contest the world has been waiting to see. It will be the third time the two protagonists are facing off in London, with Kipchoge, the world marathon record holder, having won in two previous occasions in 2016 and 2018. Kipchoge also won the 2017 Berlin Marathon, where Bekele failed to finish the race. The 2016 Rio Olympic champion will be going for an unprecedented fifth title on his fifth appearance at the London streets, having won the event in a course record time of 2 hours, 2 minutes and 37 seconds last year. Bekele will be yearning for his maiden victory in London after finishing third in 2016 and second in 2017 and sixth in 2018. He lost to Kipchoge in 2016 and 2018 respectively. Kipchoge, who is widely regarded as the greatest marathon runner of all time, is going into the race very confident after becoming the first man to run a sub-2-hour marathon at the Ineos 1-hour 59 minutes challenge last year. He cleared the course in Vienna in 1 hour 59 minutes and 40 seconds. The two men spearhead the elite men's field at the 2020 Virgin Money London Marathon, which also includes the second and third placed finishers from last year, Ethiopia's Jeremio and Washun. The London Marathon will be the fifth race in the World Marathon Majors Series 13th schedule. With three races already completed, the lead is shared by Lelisa Desisa of Ethiopia, Kenya's Lawrence Cherono and Geoffrey Kamoro. Kenya's former 800 meters world under 20 champion Alfred Kipketa has been charged for breaking whereabouts anti-doping rules. The 23-year-old is now banned from competing until his hearing has taken place. Under anti-doping regulations, athletes have to inform testing authorities of their whereabouts for a 1-hour window of every day. three failures in 12 months in not being present at the said time or filing inaccurate or incomplete information accounts as one failure and leads to an automatic ban. Kipketer won gold at the 2014 World Junior Championships in Eugene, took the world title at the 2013 World Youth Championships in Donetsk. He also has a gold medal in the men's 4x800 meters relay achieved in 2014 in Nassau, Bahamas. The charging of Kipketer comes 4 days after two-time London Marathon winner and former marathon world record holder Wilson Kipsang was charged for whereabouts failures and tampering by the Athletics Integrity Unit that has recently announced that it will be taking a more stringent approach to whereabouts requirements in 2020. Tanzania came from 2 goals down to beat Uganda 2-1 in the first leg of the first round of Africa's FIFA Women Under 20 World Cup qualifiers in Dar es Salaam on Sunday. Coach Oliver Mbekeka, having been on the technical benches of the Under 17 and the Crested Cranes teams, went for the tried and tested. Only 2 African countries will qualify for the August Under 20 World Cup due in Panama and Costa Rica, which FIFA believes is important as it gives players added experience that could immediately impact on the national team. And on that note, we come to the end of today's edition of our Sports Roundup. Until next week at the same time, my name is Kanyanta Godfrey Kampamba.
You have been listening to the English Africa service of Vatican Radio, and I am Johnny Baptist Tumusime. In our next program at the same time tomorrow, you can hear our feature, Health and Healing. Praised be Jesus Christ. Laudetur Jesus Christus.
We are one in the Spirit, we are one in the Lord. We are one in the Spirit, we are one.